St. Angelo was growing. Gin mills and their gaudy sisters in crime still dominated Concho Avenue, but here and there a respectable store had opened its doors, offering better wares. There was even some talk of building a church. While the upright new businessmen were often in conflict with the rougher order on social affairs and politics, virtually everyone in St. Angelo agreed on one point. It was time to move those Negro soldiers away from Fort Concho. At best, the blacks had been unpopular from the beginning. To ex-Confederates, a black man in a blue uniform represented misplaced authority, a swaggering symbol of a lost war. To Northerners moving in to seize upon rapidly opening business opportunities, Negroes were a social and economic burden. At worst, soldiers and citizens occasionally faced each other in open hostility that rose to riot proportions. Crimes against Negro soldiers were never prosecuted with vigor. White men had murdered them in cold blood and walked away unmolested, while a black soldier who stole a bottle or a silver dollar was thrown into St. Angela's log and mud jail amid the centipedes and scorpions. As far as Gideon was concerned, St. Angelo could go to hell. In fact, he was convinced it already had. Gideon followed Boza's hard pace past the corrals.
Hot Jimbo got himself into trouble. It's over some gal. A gal?
Gideon said girls had never been a worry to Jimbo. He bought them as he bought whiskey, and with as little attention to selection. If one wasn't available or willing, he simply chose another.
She's a yellow gal. Jimbo didn't like the way she was sporting herself around that white hunter. Said she ought to be ashamed and get herself on down the road.
The more Gideon thought about it, the less that sounded like Jimbo. Black prostitutes were a permanent fixture in St. Angela, offering themselves indiscriminately to black soldiers or white men, paying heed to no color except that of folding money or coin. Jimbo had never made any issue of it beyond making sure he got his rightful share of the women. Trotting across the new wooden bridge that spanned the Whispering River, Gideon followed Bose onto Concho Avenue. He saw a cluster of his troopers standing near the door of a raw cedar picket saloon. They were tensely ready for trouble, but he saw with relief that none had started. A recruit named Alcorn stepped forward.
Ain't nothing happened yet, Sergeant. Jimbo and that hunter, they still trying to stare each other down.
Gideon glanced across the street. A dozen or so white men, some buffalo hunters, some townspeople, stood grimly in a rough line, waiting. At the first sound of real trouble, they would come running. His troopers would meet them in the middle of the street, and some on both sides would have to be carried away. It had happened before.
You men just stand easy. I'm bringing Jimbo out of there if I have to pistol whip him.
The tight knot of soldiers split apart to let him through. He stopped in the doorway, his eyes anxiously searching the dimly lighted, smoky little room. He saw only four people. A nervous Mexican bartender, a broad-shouldered, dark-bearded buffalo hunter, Jimbo, and a girl who sat at a table, her back to the door. Her thin shoulders were hunched. She brought up a whiskey bottle and tilted her head back, her black hair hanging in uncombed strings. Between swallows, she seemed to be weeping quietly. Jimbo looked at Gideon in surprise and dismay.
What you doing here? You're supposed to be over yonder working.
I come to fetch you out of this place.
Gideon cut his gaze to the buffalo hunter, gauging the threat. The man wore a big pistol in a rough leather holster. It looked like a Navy Colt, powerful enough to do grievous damage at close quarters. The hunter studied Gideon with open belligerence, his large hand moving down to the pistol. Gideon could smell him halfway across the room. The man's voice was heavy with disdain.
Sergeant, are you? Well, it's about time somebody come with a little authority. You get this fool nigger out of here before I have to kill him.
Anger built in Gideon, but he battled it down. A black soldier seldom won a fight on this side of the river.
I come to stop trouble, not to start none. Come on, Jimbo.
To his surprise, Jimbo seemed eager.
All right, kid, I'll follow you outside.
The girl had not looked at Gideon, but on hearing his name, she turned and had to grab the table to keep from falling.
Gid? Who's that you calling Gid?
She came slowly around in the chair and tried to focus on him. The face was puffed and ill, the eyes red around dark pupils, but Gideon knew her. His knees almost buckled.
Hannah York.
She tried to get up from the chair, but sank back and took a grip on the edge of it. She stared wildly, as if searching for Gideon through a fog.
Gideon? That you, Gideon?
The words wouldn't come at first. He felt as if he'd been shot in the stomach.
It's me, Hannah.
The white man leaned forward, squeezing one eye nearly shut in menace.
Boy, you stay away from this yellow gal. She's mine.
Gideon stepped closer anyway, then stopped.
My God. Hannah, what you done to yourself?
She couldn't answer. Tears ran down her smudged cheeks.
Gideon! Gideon!
He would have moved to her, but Jimbo stepped in front of him.
She ain't who you think she is, Gid.
I know who she is. I can see for myself.
But can't you see what she is? Ain't a damn thing you can do for her now. She's too far gone.
She's alive!
Take another look at her face. You call that alive? Ain't no telling what's all wrong with her.
Gideon started to move, but Jimbo gripped his shoulders.
I tried to get her gone from here so you wouldn't never know.
You had no right. She's my Hannah.
She's everybody's Hannah, and nobody's.
Jimbo glanced back toward the buffalo hunter.
Mister, you tell him how she come to be here with you.
I don't have to explain nothing to a negra.
Boss, please.
The hunter turned baleful eyes to the sobbing woman.
I found her over in the Griffin country, being passed around from one hide camp to another. If I'd known what it cost to keep her in whiskey, I'd have left her there.
Gideon couldn't tear his gaze from the wreckage of Hannah's face, from the drunken despair in eyes once big and bright and young.
She used to be with an old granny woman. Where's the granny woman?
The hunter shrugged indifferently.
Died in Griffin. Fever or something. Gal's been doing for herself the best way she knows how, and she knows how pretty good when she ain't dead drunk.
Jimbo tried to push Gideon toward the door. Gideon pushed in return.
Turn her loose on me, Jimbo.
Jimbo seemed finally to give up.
All right. You wanted to see her, so look.
He turned, waving his hand toward Hannah.
That ain't the gal you've been carrying around in you. That gal's gone. This here's all that's left, and it ain't much.
Gideon could not look away from Hannah's eyes. He wanted to cry, but tears wouldn't come. Not since the end of that long ordeal on the blistering plains that he shed a tear. They seemed to have been burned out of him. Jimbo gripped his arm again.
You ain't no green youngin' now. You're an old soldier with a sergeant's stripes on.
Gideon stared at Hannah, trying to see her as she used to be when they had loved and dreamed and planned together. But all he could see was this broken shell, with death in her eyes. The buffalo hunter, wearied of the indecision, he shook the woman's shoulder.
Gal, you want them niggers, then you go with them. But remember, they ain't got nothing but a soldier's barracks. You can't go there. I got food and a bed in my camp and whiskey. Which way's it gonna be?
Hannah brought her eyes to Gideon's face.
You ain't really my Gideon. My Gideon was a young man. And handsome.
No, ma'am. I reckon I ain't the same man.
With a pain like a sharp knife in his belly, he turned toward the door. Jimbo took his arm and guided him.
Where's my granny at? I need to talk to my granny. Where's my granny?
Gideon stopped in the doorway, gasping the cool night air into tight, aching lungs.
Luck dealt you a mean hand tonight.
Gideon shook his head and looked down at the dirty floor.
Maybe it was the Lord's doing. Maybe he wanted me to bury the dead and study on the living.
The soldiers came up to them as they moved out into the night.
If you want to go back in there and stop him, we can hold off them white men yonder. We can hold off this whole damn town.
Gideon straightened, forcing down the choking in his throat. He made a sweeping motion with his arm.
You soldiers! Act like soldiers! Fall in!
Forming them into two lines, he marched them toward the new bridge. Badly as he wanted to look back, he held his eyes forward. Gray Horse and his small party of warriors sat in the cold and concealing shadow of a red clay hill, watching the slow plodding of a herd of longhorn cattle moving northwesterly toward the Cap Rock and the high plains. The fresh wind of September brought the taste of the stirred dust, the smell of the cattle. Gray Horse had no system for tallying so many animals as the herd amounted to, but he counted 8 cowboys on horseback and 2 wagons up ahead out of the dust. The riders were not pushing the cattle, but simply keeping them loosely bunched, letting them pick their own pace and graze as they walked. Bear that turns to fight had seen much to complain about, since this party of 9 warriors had left the reservation in the dead of a moonless night and had set out searching across their old hunting ground. Though Gray Horse had told him 12 times, Bear still claimed to know exactly what they were searching for.
You told us we would see buffalo. Those are not buffalo, and those men are not buffalo hunters.
As always, Gray Horse thought sourly, Bear was deliberately distorting his words, trying to make a show for the other men. The buffalo, Gray Horse had told him from the first, would come later, after this party had fulfilled the other parts of the dream. Once they found and killed the buffalo hunters, then attacked and destroyed the soldiers, the buffalo would come. Until then, there would be only the buffalo bones. Bear could not deny that there had been more than an abundance of those. The cattle herd troubled Gray Horse. He had seen enough of the white man's cattle given to the reservation leaders that he knew a little about how they were raised. This was not a steer herd on its way to provide government contractors beef issue requirements for the Indians. This was a cow and calf herd with many bulls. These were breeding cattle to be used for stocking purposes and to increase their numbers. Gray Horse sensed that they were going somewhere to fill a vacuum left by the elimination of the buffalo. If the buffalo came back, as told in his dream, they would have to fight the cattle for the grass. Beef, Gray Horse thought darkly, was a poor substitute for buffalo meat.
I see only 8 men with the cattle, and 2 more with the wagons. It would be easy to kill them all. We could take the cattle west and trade them to our old friends, the Comancheros. We did it often enough in better times.
Gray Horse remembered. He had never liked driving cattle. It was slow, monotonous work, without interest or adventure, after the initial taking and the discouragement of pursuit. Cattle were without character, he thought. They were to the buffalo as the dog was to the wolf.
We did not come here to take cattle or to trade with the Comancheros. We came to live out the dream.
But nothing has been as you said. Your dream was probably brought on by stealing Black Robe's whiskey.
Gray Horse tensed in anger and came close to striking his kinsman with his bow. Bear knew he would not, and he took advantage.
We have ridden almost this many days.
He held up both hands, the fingers spread. The Comanche lacked a satisfactory word for 9. It was usually termed almost 10 or not quite 10.
We have seen no buffalo, or buffalo hunters, or soldiers. We have not seen anything. I'm hungry. My nephews are hungry. I say we take the cattle and kill a few for meat before we trade the rest.
Bear made a motion as if he meant to go ahead. Gray Horse reined his pony around and blocked him.
The cattle and what we might trade them for would last only a little while. If we bring back the buffalo, they will last forever.
He cut his eyes sternly from one warrior to another, challenging Bear's growing influence. Gray Horse had been fortunate to have even these 8. He did not want to lose any. He had spent days riding the camps, carrying the red banner of war, seeking out former warriors known to him, scattered in misery and idleness on the crowded lands reserved for the Comanche. He had told many people of his dream and of its strong reality. He told them he was certain that the wolf had brought him the dream as a vision, and that the medicine of the wolf was strong enough to see it through. But too many remembered the false prophet Isitai and adobe walls. All his persuasion, all his pleading, had brought him only a few old friends who had ridden with him before the Colorado River calamity. Limping Boy was with him, of course. Limping Boy would follow him into the burrow of the cannibal owl. And there was Terrapin, staunch at heart, if weak in body. Terrapin had contracted a fever last winter and had never regained his strength as of old. Gray Horse had not wanted Bear at first, and had not asked him. But after his lack of success in finding other men to go, even Bear had seemed acceptable. Now he doubted again. Bear was like the cross-grained buffalo bull that seemed to be in every herd, frustrating the hunters, breaking up the bunch before the killing was done. Counting himself, Gray Horse actually had only 7 real warriors. Bear had brought his untried nephews, Walks Backward and Beaver Tail. They were 14 and 16, and neither had yet acquired medicine. The boys agreed eagerly and loudly every time Bear expressed an opinion. Now they itched to go kill those cowboys, to take their first scalps and count their first coups.
We can take those cattle easily.
Walks Backward was the younger of the boys.
My brother and I can kill the Tejanos by ourselves.
The three of us together.
Gray Horse knew that was empty talk, designed to shame the others into going.
Go then if you want to. But it will be just you three and no more. The rest of us have important work to do.
No one challenged his words. Bear and the two youngsters found no support strong enough to defy Gray Horse.
Then you sleep again, and see if your next dream shows us where those buffalo hunters are.
The Double Mountains stood like 2 large blue buffalo far to the southwest. Gray Horse and the others had searched that area, but some instinct kept drawing him there again. When dealing with the unseen, he had always found it wise to follow his instincts unquestioningly. Often, the spirit's words were meant to be heard by the heart, not by the ear. He pointed toward the mountains.
We will go that way when the cattle are gone.
We have been there before.
We will go there again. The dream was clear. When the time comes, we will all be shown.
Bear did not carry the argument further. Gray Horse kept a strong face as they resumed traveling, but a nagging concern nibbled at his confidence. Even losing those 3 would cripple them, pulling them down to 6. What if some of the others did follow Bear? Everywhere, Gray Horse saw the scattered buffalo bones, most of them a year old or older. He had not realized it would be so difficult to find buffalo hunters. He had not foreseen, any more than they, that their own diligence in killing would so quickly eliminate their reason for coming here. 2 years ago, this land had been infested with them like buffalo with ticks. The face of the Mother Earth had been cobwebbed by the tracks of their hide wagons. On the big breakout, the Comanches had raided Wrath's large supply camp one night, not far from these 2 mountains, and had run off every horse and mule on the place. The camp was gone now. The buffalo which had sustained it were used up. Gray Horse rode cautiously around the brow of a flat-topped hill whose protective crown rock had precariously balanced beyond the red clay base which rains had cut away from under it. The flat rock seemed ready to slide loose and crash down at any time. Along the creek lay the skinned and swelling buffalo, nakedly streaked white and red, shining eerily in the autumn sun. The men had finished loading the stiffened hides onto a single wagon and were hitching a team for their departure. One man, the hunter of the trio, sat astride a long-legged bay horse. The other 2 were skinners of a lower order on the social scale and had to ride the stinking wagon. Gray Horse's heart quickened. It was not quite as in the dream. He had seen more hunters. And the creek bank here was littered with spoiling carcasses rather than whitened bones. But they would be bones when nature's scavengers had done their work. At some distance, he heard a plaintive bawling sound, and it drew his eyes. Squinting against the sun, Gray Horse made out the form of a buffalo calf, tottering in a clumsy gait among the dead. The hunters had missed it, or had chosen not to take it. Perhaps their hearts had been touched, and they had thought to let it live. But it was probably not yet large enough to live on grass alone. Left here without mother's milk, it would slowly starve. The process had already begun. It troubled Gray Horse that the calf was nearer brown than red. That was also contrary to the vision. However, he thought the essential requirements had been met. All but 1.
Killed them.
Bear passed him and the 2 boys rushed after Bear. Gray Horse held back a little. Perhaps it was just as well to let the youngsters have their chance. Few of their age had it anymore. The hunters seemed benumbed. It had been so long since they had heard of Indian trouble that they no longer considered the possibility. The one on the horse finally came to his senses and whipped the bay around.
Yeah! Get up! Come on!
He spurred up the slope and away as hard as he could make the horse run. The pleading from the two on the wagon seemed only to push him to more speed southward. The wagon horses were frightened by the oncoming Indians and began plunging against the traces. The wagon's brake was set, so they dragged a locked wheel. One of the Skinners jumped to the ground and brought a rifle from beneath the wagon seat. The other sat frozen, his eyes grotesquely wide. He seemed unable to defend himself, either by fight or flight. The two boys struck first. They carried war clubs, and it would have been more honorable to have used those at a close distance where the danger to themselves was greater. But they were trained under Bear, and they chose to kill at the longest possible range. Both Skinners were dead from arrows before the first clubs ever struck them. The boys beat at them anyway, crushing their skulls to be sure. Bear came up and took his coup.
I am proud of you. You are both brave warriors.
One is getting away!
Gray Horse pointed at the fleeing hunter skirting a distant knoll. Bear saw no urgency.
The boys have taken honor enough. If you want the other one, go after him yourself.
In the dream, none had gotten away. Gray Horse and Limping Boy gave chase and seemed at first to be catching up to the panic-stricken hunter. But his horse was stronger and better fed, while the Indian ponies had roughed out a living of sorts all summer on the limited reservation grass. Only if the horse fell was there any chance of catching him. Gray Horse reined the pony to a stop and sat a while in frustration, watching the white man disappear, still whipping his bay. He turned back to rejoin the others, hoping the party had done enough to satisfy the spirits, though the details were not exactly as in the dream. What mattered was the final outcome. He found the two Skinners lying dead beside the wagon, their scalps taken, their bodies mutilated beyond any necessity of warfare. The boys doing, he knew, urged on by Bear. It took the taste of blood to turn a youngster into a warrior, most elders would agree. Bear had wanted to be certain about his young kinsmen, and they were eager students. The next thing to have done, had they wanted to be proper, would have been to cut the horses loose and set fire to the wagon and its load of hides, so no other white men could come along and profit by them. But Bear and the boys had not taken time. They had ridden off somewhere. Grumbling under his breath, Gray Horse rode up on a knoll to look for them. They were chasing the buffalo calf. The boys were in the lead, driving arrows into the stumbling little animal. Bear loped along behind, loudly encouraging them. Gray Horse rode at them, waving his shield.
No! Stop!
By the time he reached them, it was much too late. The boys had jumped down and cut open the belly of the dying calf. They and Bear were already dipping their hands into the steaming stomach, bringing up the curdled milk and eating with a wild eagerness. Not in years had they enjoyed such a delicacy. Gray Horse shook with rage. The other men rode up and stopped in a semicircle around him as he raged against Bear and the boys.
The calf was part of the dream! You had no right to kill it!
Bear stood licking the milk from his fingers and palm. A couple of other warriors could not restrain themselves, for mother's milk from the stomach of a newly slaughtered buffalo calf was one of the finest foods the earth and its animal children provided to the people. They leaned over the calf, taking what they could for themselves. A third man cut a slice of hot liver. Gray Horse could see how near he was to losing them. They were all hungry, and fresh meat lay here for the taking. It was hard to persuade men to listen to dreams when their stomachs growled. He relented, finally, because there was no remedy now. The calf was dead. He turned to Limping Boy and Terrapin, still on their horses.
Stay here with them. Eat. I'm going to the mountain to smoke, to watch and listen.
Don't you want to eat too?
I am not hungry.
He was. But he had found long ago that the spirit spoke more clearly to him when he was tired and hungry and thirsty than when he was full and comfortable and his body was rested.
I will go with you.
No. I need you to stay here and see that the others come later. You and Terrapin are the only ones who never look back.
He rode toward the easternmost mountain, as behind him, the men cut into the calf. He had misgivings. In the dream, the calf had still been alive when the other buffalo came up from the bones. But perhaps it wouldn't matter. If the others came back to life, so would the calf. Visions were seldom exactly like life, and life was almost never like the visions. Gideon doubted that the buffalo hunter's bay horse would ever rise to its feet again. It lay spraddled on its belly, wheezing for breath, its legs buckled. It had been run to the point of exhaustion and beyond. When the hunter had ridden over the hill and almost into the cavalry patrol, he had taken the soldiers for Indians and in a blind panic had tried to spur away. The horse, dripping with sweat, had collapsed after 200 yards. Captain Hollander had given the hunter a stiff drink from the bottle he kept in his saddlebag. The hunter had recovered to the point that the frightened story spilled out of him in a rush, like water from a turned-over barrel.
They come on us without warning. Must have been 50 of them, maybe 60. Now, we fought. God, what a fight. But my partners didn't have a chance. The Indians was on them like a swarm of hornets. But chased after me, but I managed to fight them off.
Hollander gave Gideon a quick glance with doubting eyes. The dispatches had said the agency was not sure how many had jumped, but there was no indication the number was as great as 50 or 60.
Where was it you said this attack occurred?
The man nodded northward toward the distant Double Mountains.
Other side of them hills yonder. We was just fixing to roll towards Griffin when them red devils come amongst us like a cyclone.
We can provide you a horse if you'd like to come with us and show us where you saw them.
Violently, the hunter shook his head.
I wouldn't go back yonder for all the buffalo hides in Texas. Not with no more men than you got. Soldier, they have you outnumbered by 3-1.
Hollander's patrol totaled 20 men. Lieutenant Judson had swung far to the west with another, but he was miles out of reach, over in the Caprock country, where the high plains broke away. The captain studied the trembling hunter, and compassion slowly overcame his skepticism.
I suppose we can lend you a horse if you'll turn him into the post at Griffin, give him this note.
He took a piece of paper and pencil from his pocket and began to write a note detailing where the animal came from, how it came to be in the possession of the buffalo hunter, and to arrange for its return to Fort Concho at the earliest convenience of Fort Griffin's commanding officer. His brow knitted.
We would hate to have to send a federal marshal after you with a warrant for horse theft.
I'll turn him in, I promise you that. Unless those savages kill and scalp me between here and there.
You can come with us if you don't want to go on alone.
You're paid to fight Indians. I ain't. If I ever get to Griffin alive, I'll put Texas behind me and never come back.
The captain gave the man another liberal swallow from his bottle and supervised the transfer of his saddle to a brown horse with the U.S. brand highly visible. Should the man encounter another military patrol while riding that animal, he would need Hollander's note. Worriedly, the captain watched the hunter on his way.
Perhaps I should have kept him with us.
Gideon turned to look back at the men behind him.
Like as not, he'd have thrown some of the men into a panic. We got a bunch of recruits. They ain't been up against Indians before.
They'll do what you tell them, Sergeant.
Gideon frowned. He had no such confidence. Drilling them on the post was no great challenge. Holding them together against Indians was a test he had not met. Hollander seemed to read his doubts.
Old Nettles wouldn't have worried.
He wouldn't have had to.
Hollander stared toward the mountains, his face twisting.
I'd have hoped all we had to do was haze the Indians back to the agency. But they've spilled blood now. People will demand blood for blood.
Same people that been itching to get shed of us?
Hollander nodded darkly.
The hell with them. Sir.
Hollander showed him a faint smile, but it faded.
I'm afraid we'll have to split the detail. You take half the men and circle east of the mountains. I'll take the others and circle west. We'll come back together somewhere on the north.
Gideon frowned again, counting. That was 10 men apiece, including the captain and himself. If that buffalo hunter had been even half right, he didn't want to think about it. The captain was ahead of him.
We'll not engage them, not while we're divided. Whichever group finds them first, we'll send word to the other.
He looked back at the men.
You'll want Jimbo.
Yes, sir. If it's all the same to you.
I never break up a winning hand.
The captain picked 9 men for himself, leaving the others to Gideon. Gideon noted with satisfaction that Hollander had taken half the recruits. Some officers would take the seasoned men and later blame the black non-coms for any failure.
Now remember, Sergeant, don't engage them.
Gideon had no such intention. His stripes wouldn't mean much to a frightened group of recruits under fire.
No, sir.
He saluted, but didn't get a salute in return. Hollander had never been a stickler for the book. Gideon turned in his saddle and surveyed the men left to him.
Let's be a-moving, or the captain will be halfway around before we even get started.
His stomach cold, he set out toward the east side of the mountains. Gray Horse had left his pony tied to a bush at the eastern base and had climbed to the top of the mountain, carrying his blanket and his pipe. It seemed easier despite the several years that had passed since that other time. Perhaps it was that he didn't carry the burdens of youth now, the pressure to prove himself. But he carried other burdens, much heavier in their way. He spread the blanket and talked to the wolf spirit.
Thank you, Father Wolf, for giving me back your power. I have come to fulfill the dream the wolf has given me. I am ready now for the soldiers, ready to fulfill my duty to our people.
His warriors totaled not quite 10, and he had no idea how many soldiers the army might send against him, but he had faith in the power of the wolf medicine. He dozed, his chin dropping. He was no longer sure what was reality and what was a dream. He saw the land, and he saw the buffalo upon it. He saw himself riding across the prairie on his war pony among the returned buffalo. Suddenly the pony was riderless, and he saw only a wolf trotting through the grass and small junipers. To the south he saw a movement, not as clear as in the dream, but clear enough that he knew it by its actions. It was a wolf. One lone wolf, the only creature moving across that rolling plain. The dream, if it had been that, had been short. It came back to him, and he mulled over it and saw it again in his mind's eye. He puzzled until gradually its meaning came clear to him, and all warmth was gone. He stood up, shivering, and looked toward the afternoon sun, trying to see beyond it to where the sure enough father lived. But no man could see beyond the sun. It would blind him first.
Father! Is this what you want of me?
The only answer was the wind talking through the junipers, chilling him with its breath. Gray Horse looked back down across that prairie. He no longer saw the wolf. He saw no riderless pony, no buffalo. He saw only the browned grass and the green junipers, and the distant line of trees that marked the river. No, there was something else, way past the river. Something ill-defined, but new. He put his forefingers to the edges of his eyes and stretched the skin to sharpen his vision. The thing separated into small spots. They could have been anything, antelope, buffalo. But in his heart he knew, for the wolf had told him, those were soldiers. They were the next step in fulfillment of the dream. He spoke his thanks to the spirit and folded his blanket and started back down the mountain. On the bench that stood out from the foot of the mountain, he waved his arms to catch his friends' attention. He made for them the sign that he had seen the enemy. By the time he reached the bottom, they were streaking themselves and their horses with paint. Bear had drawn concentric red circles around his old scar. Gray Horse used black paint to put the lightning on his face and the wolf tracks across his body. He took his shield from its deerskin cover and straightened the feathers, cramped from the carrying. He let the old scalp and the buffalo tail hang.
Now you will see the rest of my dream. You will see if I lied.
He straightened his buffalo horn headdress. He swung onto his war-painted pony and started south to meet the soldiers. At the distance, he had been unable to count them. It didn't matter, for the outcome was ordained. Down here on the prairie, the wind was not nearly so cold. The autumn sun was warm and benign in a late afternoon sky. Limping Boy pulled up beside him.
It is a good day for a fight, brother. It would even be a good day to die.
You will not die. It was not in the dream for you to die.
And you, Grey Horse? What did the dream say about you?
Grey Horse rode in silence a minute, then pointed.
We will wait for them by the creek, where they used to make camp. We can surprise them there.
Rivers had aroused a cautious spirit in Gideon Ledbetter since that first confrontation with Indians on the Colorado. Though they passed the river in safety, a strong uneasiness continued to trouble him. His itching backside was uncomfortable against the candle of the McClellan saddle. He found himself standing in the stirrups, straining to see what lay beyond. Jimbo rode up beside him. He was also turning his head slowly, searching.
You got the same notion I have?
Yeah, out there someplace. I feel like I can reach out and touch him.
Remember, we ain't supposed to make no fight. Captain told us that mighty clear.
He didn't tell the Indians.
Gideon looked back at the men behind them, intending to warn them to stay alert, but he saw the admonition was needless. Every face was strained. Every carbine was up and ready. The patrol moved in an easy trot across the gentle rise and fall of the sandy prairie. Gideon knew he was supposed to watch the ground for tracks, but he could do no more than glance down at intervals, then up again. He had no intention of riding into an ambush with his head down. A line of scrub timber ahead told him of a creek. He thought he remembered it from an old scouting trip, a small stream fed by a series of springs and seeps that yielded better water than most. He recognized it for certain as he neared it, recalling that the other time it had shown signs of an abandoned Indian camp. The river caution arose in him again. He slowed to a walk and held up his hand for the men to do likewise. He moved out a little farther in front of them, trying to watch for tracks without looking down for more than a few seconds at a time. As he came to the creek bank, a covey of quail flushed, and he whipped the carbine to his shoulder. He glanced back at Jimbo, let a smile break across his face. He found he was sweating despite the chill in the wind. He waited for the men to catch up, which didn't take long. There were no stragglers. He scouted the creek himself, leaving the men sitting their mounts on the south bank. His horse waded quietly across the clear stream and struggled for footing as he challenged the soft north bank. He almost tumbled. Gideon quickly let up on the reins to give him his head. In the moment that he looked down, the corner of his eye caught a movement. The Indians came over the bank like an explosion out of the lowering sun, firing rifles and loosing arrows. The startled soldiers began crossing the creek. They caught the patrol in midstream. Gideon raised his carbine and made one quick shot into that color-streaked oncoming mass without taking time to aim. He pulled the horse around and motioned with his hand, urging the troopers back out of the creek. They turned their mounts. An arrow thumped into a recruit's back. He slid out of the saddle, landing face down in the water. Gideon saw at a glance that he was dead, or would be in a minute.
Pull back! We can't stop in this creek!
The rest of the men were quickly up over the bank. Gideon spurred after them. Jimbo turned and began firing, trying to cover Gideon's retreat. Most of the others were running hard, every man for himself.
Hold together! Don't scatter, or they'll kill you!
They weren't listening to him. A cold chill gripped him as he realized his worst fears were about to come to pass. He wasn't soldier enough to hold them. The Indian's charge wavered. Terrapin jerked as a slug caught him in the chest. He turned half around and tumbled heavily into the water. Grey Horse was in the lead, loosing arrows at the running troopers as rapidly as he could draw them and fit them to the string. The two young brothers were almost abreast of him, yipping like pups hot after a rabbit. Ahead of him, up on the south bank, Grey Horse saw what appeared to be a solid wall of black smoke, fire cutting through it as the carbines blazed. A horse went down behind him. He felt a blow that almost ripped the shield from his arm. The shield had turned a bullet. By the sounds from behind him, he sensed that the charge had broken up. He glanced back and saw only Limping Boy trailing. The rest of the warriors milled in confusion. Bear and Walks Backward were supporting Beaver Tail, holding him on his pony while they took him out of the creek. Grey Horse waved his arm.
Come on! We have them!
No one came except Limping Boy. Gray Horse realized the futility of making the charge by himself. He turned, motioning for Limping Boy to pull back. Terrapin lay still in the shallow water behind them. Gray Horse and Limping Boy rode on either side. They leaned down, each grabbing an arm, and pulled Terrapin up between them. Going up the bank together, they eased Terrapin gently to the ground on the far side of the creek. Terrapin's eyes were open, but they would never see again. Gray Horse did not have time for grief. The Buffalo soldiers were retreating in confusion. This was the time to strike, to finish the fight before they regained their wits. A black trooper with marks on his sleeve was giving orders. That man must be the chief. If Gray Horse could kill that one, perhaps the rest would fall easily. He could not give the men time to count their wounds or take counsel with new fears. Beaver Tail was slumped over, holding his hand against his ribs, blood trickling between his fingers.
They're running away! They have killed Terrapin and wounded Beaver Tail! Do you want them to escape? Let's go!
He reined his war pony around and saw hesitation in the men.
Are you warriors? Or did I bring women?
He put them to the test by moving into a run, going forward with them or without them. He heard hoofbeats behind him and knew they were coming. They hit the creek and left a wake of muddy water swirling as they climbed the low south bank. Gideon Ledbetter, riding as a rear guard, saw them coming.
Halt!
He called to the running men.
We gotta turn and face them, else they'll ride us down and kill us one at a time.
For a moment, it seemed his words went unheeded, but he stopped and set the example. Jimbo pulled up beside him. One of the recruits reined around and came back. Looking over their shoulders, the others followed one by one. They spread out in a line, Gideon in center. As the rifle-carrying Indians fired their first shots, the troopers responded. For a moment, Gray Horse thought he would overrun the soldiers this time. The shield was over his left arm, its rim-tied feathers streaming. He rode directly towards a rough line of black smoke. He could see the face of the soldier chief, the white-rimmed eyes wide with excitement, and he brought his bow around. His pony broke stride. The ground rushed up and slammed against Gray Horse's shoulder, and then the length of his body, knocking much of the breath from him. Instinctively, he scrambled clear of his dying horse, away from those dangerous kicking hooves. Limping Boy rode to him through the dust, leaning, reaching toward him. Gray Horse caught his arm and swung up behind him. Limping Boy reined around and retreated. Gray Horse held his shield over his shoulder to protect his back. To his dismay, he saw the other warriors pulling northward, away from the fight. Bear and clouding for rain held the boy walks backward between them.
Stop!
The soldiers were retreating again. It was time to hit them once more, but he could not bring out the words as he wanted them to be. Gideon Ledbetter shuddered. He looked proudly at the line of men who had rallied on either side of him. They had responded to his call. They had followed his orders under fire. But that second charge had come close to overrunning them. Patrol was too much in the open here. He remembered a ravine back a little farther toward the river. If they could reach it, they could set up a stand.
Back! Hurry! If we can make the ravine, we can hold! Maybe Captain will hear the shooting and come for us!
The men moved out in a body, not in panic, but as soldiers. Jimbo held up to join Gideon as a rear guard.
I'll handle this. You go prod them along. Keep them moving as fast as they can.
If them Indians get you cut off out here, they're gonna kill you awful dead.
Damn you, Jimbo! Don't you know an order when you hear it?
Jimbo hurried after the retreating troopers while Gideon trailed, watching over his shoulder for the next charge. Gray Horse leaned against Limping Boy's dun horse and fought to put breath back into his lungs. He saw defeat in the men's eyes. The wounded Beaver Tail knelt over the body of his brother, and he cried in the unrestrained grief of a boy not grown. Bear stood beside him, his arm bleeding. Other men sat slumped on their ponies. One pony bled from a deep gash in its chest where a soldier bullet had slashed through and gone out. He would be dead in a little while. Gray Horse pointed toward the retreating soldiers.
Their spirit is broken. We can get them this time, and it will all be finished.
Bear's eyes were full of anger.
Look at us, Gray Horse. We are finished. My nephew is dead, and Terrapin is dead. and my other nephew has a hole in his side. Half our horses are dead or wounded.
More reason to kill the soldiers.
The soldiers. Your dream said the soldiers would fall to us. But you dreamed what you wanted to dream. Your medicine is bad.
The medicine is good!
Greyhorse cut his eyes from one man to another, fighting the despair he saw.
Don't you want the buffalo back? Don't you want to reclaim what is ours?
Bear no longer taunted him because he knew he spoke for the others.
This is not a good fight. We will go away now and fight again at a better time.
If you run away now, you will never fight again.
But in the downcast faces, he could see the promise of the dream slipping away. The spirits were strong, but the spirits worked through men. Men were sometimes weak. The riders turned away, moving back toward the creek.
I will go by myself if I have to! I will kill them alone!
But only Limping Boy listened. He sat staring down at Grey Horse from the back of the dun.
Brother, the dream has been spoiled.
He patted the horse on the rump.
Get up here with me. We can catch Terrapin's horse.
The riderless sorrel had followed the warriors past the creek and stood now watching the other horses, its ears flicking nervously.
Catch him for me.
Greyhorse looked toward the soldiers, still moving away. He tried to hold down the tears that burned his eyes. When his cousin returned, Greyhorse swung onto the sorrel. Limping Boy turned north, then stopped, for Greyhorse still faced south toward the soldiers.
We had better go, brother. The others are far ahead of us.
Go with them. The spirits told me what I have to do.
You cannot kill them by yourself.
The dream said we would kill them. The wolf would not lie to me.
Limping Boy recognized his determination.
Then there will be two of us against them.
Grey Horse's heart warmed.
You have always been a brother to me, Limping Boy. But the dream did not show that you were to die today.
Then I will not die, but I will ride with you.
Grey Horse looked again toward the soldiers, still moving southward.
Let's go!
Gideon had watched the Indians pull away toward the creek. Breath had come easier to him. It was the Comanche way to hit hard, then move off quickly beyond reach. This meant more than likely that the battle was done. The patrol had held its ground and had driven the Indians back. Esau Nettles would not have done better. Gideon felt a warm glow of pride as he looked at the troopers ahead of him. Even old Nettles would have admitted they were men. He could see the ravine a short way ahead. The foremost of the troopers had nearly reached it.
Engine's coming back!
Gideon turned quickly in the saddle, bringing up the Springfield. Incredulously, he watched two Indians race toward him. One on a sorrel horse wore a buffalo headdress and carried a bullhide shield from which feathers and a scalp and a buffalo tail streamed in the wind. The other rode a dun horse and trailed slightly behind. Gideon measured the distance to his patrol and knew he could not catch up. Here, he must turn and stand. The troopers began firing, trying to help him. The dun horse fell headlong, pinning its rider in the grass. But the other horseman did not slow or look back. He came on, the bullhide shield over his left arm, an arrow fitted to his bow. Gideon swung from the saddle and dropped to his knee, bringing up the carbine and looking for an opening around the shield. Time seemed to stand still. The past came rushing over him. He had a chilling sense of having been here before. In the few seconds while he looked for a vulnerable place to lie in his sights, he had an uncanny feeling that he had seen that shield with the lightning streak and the wolf tracks, the feathers of many kinds. He thought he had seen that face before, a face streaked with painted lightning. The Indian was almost upon him. As Gideon found an opening to the painted breast, he thought he saw recognition in those desperate eyes, a fleeting moment of hesitation. He squeezed the trigger, an instant before, a steel-tipped arrow seared into his shoulder. In the drift of burned powder, he saw the Indian grab at the neck of the running horse. He saw a crimson stream of blood. The warrior slipped over the pony's withers and fell loosely to the ground. The sorrel began a wide circle, frightened by the gunfire and black smoke. Gideon swayed, almost falling backward. He struggled to his feet, staggered a couple of aimless steps, and went to his knees. He braced himself with his hands to keep from falling on his face. He stared through a reddish haze at the arrow shaft quivering in his shoulder. Instinctively, he reached for it, but could not pull it out. He felt the blood flowing hot. Heavy boots rushed through the grass. Jimbo was at his side with Lonnie Bowes and one of the recruits. They caught Gideon as he was about to slump.
Come on! The rest of the minions is liable to be on us in a minute. Let's tow them yonder to that ditch!
Gideon felt himself half carried, half dragged to the edge of the ravine. They tried to stretch him out on the ground, but he fought against that.
Hold me up.
You've got to lay down.
No, I ain't. I'm staying on my feet. Got to give my report when the captain comes.
The arrow had driven so deeply through his shoulder that more protruded from his back than showed in front. It was far from his heart, but he knew that shock could kill him. He fought against the gagging nausea, the dizzying pull toward the ground. He thought if he could keep talking, he might resist unconsciousness.
Promise me, Jimbo, you'll hold me up.
You hang on now. Don't you go and die on us.
I won't die if you keep me up off of that ground.
Jimbo whittled off the feathered end of the shaft, grasped the head, and jerked the arrow on through. Gideon came near fainting. The men tried to lay him down in the sand, but he resisted. It would be too easy to give up and die there. The sergeant's place was on his feet.
You all just keep propping me up. I'm gonna live to be an old soldier. I ain't letting them white officers out of paying me my pension money.
Jimbo and the others plugged the hole at both ends with dirty cloth to stop the blood. Gideon's knees sagged, but the men held him up. He was gonna make it. He knew at that moment he was going to live. He had only to keep his eyes open. Vision cleared a little. The red haze paled. He could see the wind fluttering the feathers of the warrior's fallen shield. The Comanche did not move. But something did. Gideon cut his gaze to the fallen dun horse and saw the other Indian pulling himself from under the dead weight. Limping Boy pushed cautiously to his knees, then to his feet. He stood there a moment, expecting to be shot. Slowly, he drew the knife from his belt and threw it away so all could see. Jimbo raised his carbine.
Wait, I don't see no gun on him.
Jimbo lowered the weapon, but not much.
Been enough killing. Don't shoot him if you don't have to.
Limping Boy moved slowly toward the fallen gray horse, his anxious eyes sweeping the trooper's position. As his confidence strengthened, so did his steps. He made the last few in long, limping strides and dropped to one knee. He placed the flat of his hand over his cousin's heart and felt for life. When he lifted the hand, it was bloody, and his eyes were stricken. He bowed his head. Tears streamed down his face. Gideon had never considered that an Indian warrior could cry. Limping Boy looked around for the sorrel horse that had been Terrapin's. He started walking toward it. Jimbo raised the carbine again.
No. Let him go.
Limping Boy caught the sorrel's reins and led it back to where Gray Horse lay. He put his arms under those of his cousin and strained, lifting him up. The horse danced nervously, smelling the blood. Limping Boy tried to hoist his cousin onto the sorrel's back, but could not. The soldiers watched him struggle. Finally, Jimbo handed his rifle to Lonnie Bowes and walked out slowly. Limping Boy watched him with fear, but did not back away. Jimbo started talking, using the gentle tone that had always calmed horses for him. It seemed to calm the Indian. Jimbo took the reins near the sorrel's mouth, then patted the animal on the neck and held it still. Limping Boy lifted his cousin onto the sorrel's back, stomach down. His eyes still distrustful of Jimbo, he knelt and retrieved the fallen medicine shield. Jimbo took a few steps backward to reassure him. Limping Boy laid his hand on his cousin's body. He looked one more time at Gideon and the other soldiers. His eyes were the saddest Gideon had ever seen. He walked northward, leading the sorrel. He did not look back again. Lonnie Bowes raised his carbine to the ready.
Sergeant, we're letting that redskin get away.
Gideon motioned for him to put the weapon down.
It don't matter. It's over.
The nausea was coming upon him again, cold sweat breaking on his face. But he could still see past the walking Indian, beyond the creek where the other Comanches were in retreat.
It's all over.
The troopers who had been spread out gathered quietly around Gideon. He saw respect in their eyes and relief, but they could tell he was not going to die. He might take it in his head never to die.
It cussed us Buffalo soldiers before, and they'll cuss us again. But you boys done a job of work here. They can't never take that away from us.
Far ahead of Limping Boy, the rest of the beaten war party turned eastward toward Fort Sill and the Agency, the sinking sun at their backs. Limping Boy gave them a glance, but did not follow. They would live out their lives on the reservation and be buried there. But Gray Horse was going home, where he had been free, where now he would always be free. Limping Boy set his gaze upon the reddening Double Mountains, where Gray Horse's spirits waited to claim him. Ahead of him, a gray wolf trotted, its nose held high into the north wind. The Wolf and the Buffalo is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1986, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with the estate of Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates Incorporated, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Tim Getman, Tony Nam, Thomas Penny, Elliot Dash, Nanette Savard, James Lewis, Evan Casey, Thomas Keegan, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Anastasia Wilson, Jeff Allen, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Dexter Hamlet, Nathaniel Perry, Donnie Stevens, Catherine Aselford, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Patrick Stratton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Kenneth Jackson. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Wolf and the Buffalo, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers and Sons of Texas series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Can Frank Morgan gun down his own flesh and blood? Find out in The Last Gunfighter number 23. Montana Gundam. Available now in Graphic Audio.
The Samhasts have been driven to the brink of extinction. But from the depths of a primeval source of power, a new threat is rising. The last stand of the Samhasts will bring the land of Haunts to the brink of destruction. And this time, even the Highwayman may not be able to save the world from the darkness of the Ancient. Don't miss the thrilling continuation of the Saga of the First King in R.A. Salvatore's The Ancient. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.